Welcome to CYC Podcast, Discussions on Child and Youth Care, episode number 55. I'm your host, Wolfgang Vachon. We're continuing our conversations with students regarding their original research on CYC practice in residential care. This is the last of the three interviews. Have a listen.
My name's Jamie Mitchell, and I am a recent almost graduate of Humber's BA CYC program. I have been in the field of child and youth care for approximately 15 years. I work mainly in residential and shelter milieus. My youth of choice are teens. I'm also a mom of three children, ranging in age from 8 to 20.
Welcome, Jamie.
Thanks.
I really appreciate you taking the time to talk about your thesis. I've read it, and I think it's a lovely piece of work. So nobody else who's listening has read it, most likely. So in a few sentences, what was your thesis about?
My thesis, my very big thesis, was an exploration, basically, of deficit-based language that I've been in a position to observe, and I have many colleagues, coworkers who I've had this conversation with, being used in the field of child and youth care in the residential setting, mainly between staff. When we're communicating about the young people that we care for.
And what do you mean by deficit-based language?
Can I get away with saying not strength-based?
That's a good starting point.
Language, I wish it had a name. Language that focuses on deficits or diagnosis. Just language that is inappropriate often. Hurtful, harmful, I would say.
Why would identifying a diagnosis be hurtful or harmful?
Well, what I've discovered and what I believed before going into the research is that when youth care practitioners participate, I'm not sure if that's the right word, engage regularly in using negative language, it kind of orients them in such a way, I think, that directly affects how they work with the youth that are in their care, as well as the people on their team. It's complicated, but it kind of acts like a toxin. Do you want me to explain?
Yeah, please.
Okay. So, for example, I will go in for a shift, and depending on who's giving me shift change, you know, the person that's going to leave, that person will often say, Billy had a really crappy day, he was a jerk all day long, he wasn't compliant, you know, he's not with the program, he shouldn't be allowed at any privileges, and so on through each kid, where every deficit is, that's not the right word. The shift change focuses basically on all of the negative things that happen throughout the day. And another way that you see it is when staff are talking about clients, they'll often say, we're getting a new kid in tomorrow, he's suicidal, and they'll just list the pathologies that are, you know, that come in the logbook before we actually meet the kid.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does make a lot of sense. And so what I'm hearing in it's a couple different things. In the shift change, there's a lot of negative language, a lot of language around problems, a lot of language around what, you know, James didn't do, or
yes,
what, you know, Brenda, you know, what her problems were, rather than what her successes were, et cetera, et cetera. And it also sounds that the example you gave was very much about what I heard underneath that is, I had a really hard time today, and I'm putting that on the young person. Would you say that was part of it as well?
Yeah. And it's also, it orients you towards how you're going to then work with that youth. So when I walk in, I don't get to say, hey, you guys, I'm on shift, what are we going to do tonight? As soon as I'm walking in, hearing everything that they did wrong, all of the ways that they didn't comply, and basically that will dictate often how I'm told that I should work with them.
Explicitly or implicitly? Is it, you know, Jamie, you need to work? Okay.
Depends on who, but definitely both. Sometimes it's quite explicit and, you know, often I don't agree. but you have to support your team and the plan that's put in place. And
you're currently working residential, you're working treatment, shelter, a hospital. Can you give
us
a sense?
I'm in three different agencies at the moment. Where I am mostly is a residential setting for adolescent boys.
Okay.
Tough group of kids, but they're awesome. depending on who you ask.
Yeah, indeed. So where did the idea of this particular research project come from?
Oh, my goodness. I think I started thinking about it as soon as I heard we had to do a thesis. Initially, I was interested in how we represent our young people via those logbooks. Because often, you know, before we even receive a youth, we're given this epic War and Peace-sized, you know, thing that represents the youth that we're going to meet. And it's filled with everything that this young person has ever done wrong, all of the people who've worked with that youth up until that point, all of their perceptions, which are often really negative. Anyway, it was a long process, but that basically got me to thinking that those logbooks basically come about as a result of our attitudes, our approach. And then I started thinking about the language, which is just so commonplace. At least that's what I believed at the time. I wasn't sure going into the research. That's negative. And you see that when those logs are written. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does. And so it was coming out of your own experience and your concerns and reading logs, reading reports, reading files. What did you find once you started doing the research?
I found that there was zero research. That was the most impactful thing for me.
There was zero research about our language in working with young people?
Yeah, there was just nothing that talked about specifically, the way we speak about the young people that we work with and its impacts. I mean, I found a lot of research about nursing teams and, you know, other teams, but nothing specific to this topic. And it was interesting because while I was going through school, as you know, I was also working, and I picked up two jobs on top of the one that I've been at forever. And I was just astounded that, I don't know, we're in 2015, and it's everywhere. It's everywhere I go. So that was kind of what spurred it on, I suppose.
Any thoughts on why there hasn't been work done on this?
I'm not sure. I feel like there has to be, but that I just haven't typed in the magical set of keywords.
Right.
But I think as a field, we're young still. I don't really know. I think it's a taboo topic, but I also think there's lots of people out there that would probably love to tackle it. Maybe, I don't know, maybe no one's gotten there yet.
Right.
I'm not sure.
Well, you have. So you've gotten there. So I hope you continue to disseminate this. You identified a little bit of the examples around a shift change and, you know, Frank was a jerk today and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we got this, you know, kid coming in who's suicidal and, you know, they're going to be X, Y, Z. What was some of the other negative language that people identified in the research that you did?
Okay. He just cuts to get attention. She's such a drama seeker. No wonder that kid's parents didn't want him. I had a supervisor say to me not too long ago, straight out, that she couldn't stand one of our kids. It's just sort of this free flow of really harsh opinions that aren't very congruent with what we're supposed to be doing.
And what do you think the impact of this is on, let's start with the young people?
Well, I think it's huge. I actually have kind of been immersed in this exact situation for the last few weeks at one of the residences that I work at. And basically, you know, if it's tomorrow night, if staff A goes into work, this youth will probably have a great day. He'll have a great shift and everything will be honky-dory. And if a different staff works, without a doubt, he will have issues, probably have a meltdown. And this is all just based on the language and the attitude. And when you put two staff together that are both like-minded, it's impactful. So I know recently, very recently, this is just in the last 2 weeks, I had a youth tell me that he was afraid of a person that I was, that was part of my team. That person did get fired, by the way. Mm. Yay.
Yay. Afraid of what?
Well, this individual, I have met others like him, but not many. He was like the top of, as bad as you can picture. Mm. He was up towards that level. I had several supervision meetings about him. But he would go in on shift and call the kids the C word to their face.
Wow.
Little F heads. I'll make your life miserable. Like, just unbelievable. And I mean, that's at the high end of of what I wrote about, but it's problematic. And I mean, for one youth, I wanted him to talk about it to somebody that could, you know, back up that it wasn't just me reporting what he was telling me, and he was too afraid because he had to be there when this person was on shift.
Sure.
So,
what do you think the impact is on ourselves? So on me as a practitioner, when I use this language, how does it affect me? Why is it a problem for me?
Like if you were the person engaging in it?
Yeah. So if, you know, I have a difficult time and you come on shift and I'm like, oh man, that little, you know, whatever was such a pain in the whatever, like, oh, I can't believe it. You're going to have a rough time. You know, what's wrong with me doing that? What's wrong with me sharing with my team? You know, oh, that guy's a pain in the, you know, why can't I say that?
Well, I think for someone that's oriented to think and speak that way, as though it's perfectly acceptable, there probably is little impact. Hmm. And I know in the case that I recently, you know, have just gone through, that person absolutely believed that they were correct and right, and it was all about the kids. It was the kids' fault.
Mm-hmm. You talk a lot about trauma. Or you write a lot about the trauma with the young people, and you talk about the trauma that staff experience. Do you think when we hear other staff saying this language that it has a traumatizing effect on our colleagues?
Absolutely. Maybe not all, but definitely many. I'll tell you something. What I wanted going into this, hoped for, I think. I don't even know if that's the right way to put it. My assumption was that trauma had to be the cause. And I would say, now that I'm out of the paper and I'm not being graded on it, organizations are absolutely traumatized, but I think a better word would be broken or damaged. Mm. I don't think in most of the cases, though, that trauma works, you know, as an explanation. Hmm. I know that a lot of the trauma that I wrote about was burnout, and I've been thinking about that a lot since writing the paper, and I've kind of come to decide that calling it burnout is a bit of a cop-out, because when you think of other fields, you know, there's lots of other fields that are high stress, very demanding, low paying like ours. But I can't think of any other place where people would display their stress in the way that I've seen people display their stress, you know, calling youth names or, you know, calling them dickheads or assholes. I think it's about attitude and education and, I don't know, just approach.
Towards the end of the thesis, you make some suggestions regarding what can be done in this matter. What were some of the suggestions that came out of the research subjects about how we move forward, how we shift away from a deficit-based language, how we shift towards a strength-based language, how we address this on an organizational or an individual level?
Oh, that's tough, because it's a big, huge, ginormous problem. I think the simple answer is courage. I think we have to hold one another accountable. I think we have to hold ourselves accountable, and I think we have to hold our agencies accountable, and we need to talk about it. And people are talking about it. I think they're just talking about it in quiet little groupings. They're not directly confronting it, and confronting it can be difficult. It's almost like an entire shift of the way an organization functions is what needs to happen, and I don't really know what the answer is to that, other than that a conversation needs to begin and somebody needs to bring the conversation forward. I would love to see lots of people writing about it so that more people would start talking about it. I think that's the beginning, but I don't know. In all of the agencies I work in, other than one, the supervisors aren't even aware of what's going on the floor because they're at home. And when they are in the building, everybody's on their best behavior. So if nobody brings it forward, and that's difficult, the whole subject of silence, as you know, came up a lot, and it's pretty much grounded in fear, you know, fear of being ostracized, fear of losing your job, fear of being looked at as a troublemaker. I think it was like a list of 15.
I want to thank you, Jamie, for having the courage to do the project. I want to thank you for raising the conversation, for identifying fear as a factor and for naming it as such. I really hope that you are able to continue this conversation in a public way, which is part of the reason I invited you on to speak about it. And I would really encourage you to find ways to disseminate this broader and into the general CYC and human services, social services field, because I think it is a conversation that absolutely needs to happen. That as I was reading your thesis, I found myself getting very angry, and as you were talking, I found myself getting upset, and that can be a wonderful catalyst to overcome fear. And so I hope that you continue to disseminate it. Just as we close up, is there anything else that came out of your research that's really important that you want to mention before we say goodbye?
Well, what came out first was discouragement, and then determination. As I said, I have to tell you the story, and I'll make it really quick. This was going on in an agency that I work at, an agency that I love, that for the most part does a really great job. And as I started becoming part of the team and, you know, part of the little culture, I started, you know, making comments, commenting, questioning the person themselves. I went to my supervisor 3 times, talked to a couple of our full-time staff and was discouraged from raising it again. They told me that everybody had been complaining about this person for almost 2 years, and nothing was going to change, and I kept at it. And someone else submitted an incident report, I guess, the same evening that I did, and that person no longer works for the agency, and that's a good thing, because that person had no business being there. I think we have to remember why we're there. You know, we're there for the kids and to advocate for them. And
I agree. I think advocacy is very much part of our role. And I think it's great that you were able to continue to bring this up and not say, we're going to resign ourselves because this person's been here for 2 years damaging people. We'll let him or her continue to damage people.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And the youth are happy. You're welcome. Sorry.
No, that's good. The youth are happy. You know, hey, that's a good start, right? Having people we work with happy on shift makes it easier.
Yep.
Absolutely. And, you know, when people are in an emotional space where they're open, it's much easier to do work with them.
Agree.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today, Jamie.
Thanks, Beck.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast.
Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher.
Visit us online at cycpodcast.org.